everybody. What's going on? Rob Cesternino here with a special edition of Rob Has a Podcast, because we are catching up with somebody who was one of the pioneers of the reality TV. Somebody who I used to watch in the very first season of Big Brother all the way back when I was in college. And I'm somebody that people say, boy, you were on the show a long time ago. Please welcome in the winner of the original Big Brother, Big Brother 2000, Eddie McGee.
Hey.
Eddie is here to talk about what he's been up to since way back when, 16 years ago. Can you believe it?
Wow. Yeah.
To talk about some of the stuff that he's working on now. And here with me in the studio, we got the YouTube video up. If you want to check that out, if you're listening to the podcast only version. Eddie, how are you?
I'm fantastic, man. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, thank you. You'd reached out to me a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, sure, let's do it. Come on over. I didn't know that you were here in the LA area.
Yeah.
So excited to have you here in
thank
the studio.
You.
We met super brief one time previously, back in 2004.
So, 04, yeah, it was like
2004. I've talked about it on the podcast before. I used to work with Josh Souza for a year, your housemate at one point in time.
Yep.
And we had put out, it's probably the worst idea ever, of a Christmas CD with reality stars singing. If anybody can find a copy, I'll pay you to send it to me so I can destroy it. We did that, and you were there, and Josh Souza brought you out one night, probably against your wishes.
Yeah, no, it wasn't against my wishes. He had dropped me a line. I was out here shooting a picture with Paul Huff, and we had just wrapped up. And he says, "Hey, I'm up in the hills at this house doing this Christmas thing. Come on up. There's a couple of us here from our show and a couple other shows. I had met you," and he's like, "They got an open bar." I said, "I'm on my way. I'll
all
see
right.
you up there."
Yeah, and I met you briefly then, and I think that was probably the only time. You and I both hail from Long Island.
Yeah,
and you Mets or Yankee fan?
Met fan.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yes.
Let's go Mets.
Let's go Mets. Okay.
Let's go amazing.
We got a whole second podcast to do after this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we'll talk a little bit about how you got involved with the Big Brother and everything. But what have you been keeping up with since we saw you on the show back in 2000? The short version.
I've been working in film and television right after the show. I got involved with a production company in Toronto, went up, shot my first feature film in 2001, right after Big Brother. And then got myself an agent in New York, and you know, he was really good, got me out on Law and Order and a couple other shows there. And then he said, if you really want to take a stab at it, move to LA.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved out here about 8-9 years ago.
Okay.
And been happily working since then.
So. Okay. So this is, you know, very, very exciting to, talk about this. Cause you don't really ever talk about the Big Brother stuff. I feel like the little bit that I know about you, I feel like that you really have sort of like other people have sort of like run into it and embraced it.
Right.
And you, I feel like, have really, distanced yourself from most of all things Big Brother.
Yeah. Yeah, I have. I was a broadcasting major and a theater minor at the University of Texas in Arlington, where I was playing wheelchair basketball. And I got into Big Brother, and I wanted to have a career in film and television.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt from day one after I got off the show, it was great, and it springboarded me into other opportunities. But the market and people, it just became so saturated with reality TV people trying to be, you know, these new stars, and I distanced myself from it, and I focused on, you know, my acting and working hard and going at it from there and being respected as an actor, not a reality TV star.
So you felt like you had a good experience with the show. It wasn't anything about
No, it was fantastic. No, it was great. I was a 21-year-old snot-nosed kid from New York, and I got an opportunity to be on the show and meet some cool people and do some really cool stuff. And not bitter at all about it, just to be taken seriously, I believe that I had to distance myself from it and focus more on my career.
You know, in talking with other people from that era, that I had Mike Boogie here last year. And one of the things that he's talked about was that there was a point in time where being somebody from a reality TV show. Like, we didn't know how it went. Like, I would advise somebody now, if you're trying to springboard into a career as an actor, maybe a reality TV show is not the best way to
right.
do it.
I agree.
But nobody knew that at right. the time. Right. And he had said, like, Colleen Haskell, he felt like she ruined it for everybody, that she was in the movie with Rob Schneider and right. she did a bad job.
Right.
And then that sort of, like, ruined it for – I mean, is that something that you – have you heard that before?
Yes, no, I have heard that before, but you know, I don't think she ruined it per se. I just, you know, I believe best person for the job. You know, mm-hmm. Whether she did a great job or not, you know, that let that I'll let you decide.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think she ruined it per se. No, I think you just if you're serious about it and you focus on it and you study and you train and you work on your craft and you're a good actor, you'll get casted in the roles that you should be in.
So is that something that you went into that first season of Big Brother, which I'm sure was like a complete blank slate for you as to what it was going to be? Did you feel like, okay, I'm going to go do this and then I'm going to get notoriety and then that'll be a springboard for me?
No, not really. I had wanted to be an actor since I was about 5 years old, mm-hmm. and I lost my leg to cancer when I was 11. So after I lost my leg, I thought there was no way I could be an actor because there's nobody in mainstream film or television for me to look up to aspire to be. There's no guy with one arm or one leg or paraplegic. There's not even a major character in a show, mm-hmm. You know, at the time for me to look up to. So I was going to go into radio. I was just going to get a little bullshit job at some little radio station on Long Island and play rock and roll and tell you about the weather and traffic and be happy.
Yeah.
Then Big Brother came along, did that. And then when I got out, that's when a production company had sought me out from Toronto and said, hey, you know, we did some research on you. So you were a broadcasting major and a theater minor. Can you put yourself on tape for this film I was doing up there called Drop Dead Roses? Mm-hmm. Went out for it, nailed the job and, you know, started. Then I started seeing that, oh, well, maybe I can do this. And this film did do okay. And I am being accepted as a regular actor. So let me pursue this.
Mm-hmm. So in that summer of 2000, mm-hmm. you obviously had no idea what this was going to be. And this was such a crazy time in that, you know, Survivor had only been on the air for like a month.
Yeah.
I think that CBS had the rights to do a Big Brother from around that same time. And I don't know if they fast-tracked it at all because Survivor was doing well.
Right.
But what did they tell you? I mean, what did you see that ultimately got you to say, this is something that I wanted to do?
To get on Big Brother?
Yeah, to even know to apply to beyond Big Brother. Obviously, you talked to somebody.
Yeah, it was more of a dare than anything.
Yeah.
I had
who dared you?
Guys I was going to college with. Guys I was playing wheelchair basketball.
Is I dare you to go do this?
Yeah, it was kind of one of those things like, Eddie, you know, and originally I was going to go out for Real World on MTV.
Yeah,
Because that was the only, Cops and Real World were the only two reality TV shows out, you know, mm-hmm. and they'd only been out a few years at that. So I was going to go out for Real World, but the auditions for Real World were in August of that year, I believe. So a friend of mine said, hey, look, why don't you go out for the show called Big Brother, go out for that, and then maybe you can figure out the casting process and you can, you know, hone in on your skills for the August auditions
yeah.
for Real World. So I said, okay.
Okay.
So I went on down and I had an old beat up Camaro and I was hungover as all hell. And
yeah.
I knocked on the CBS door and this big guy come up and he's like, what can I help you with? I'm like, I'm here for this audition for this thing, Big Brother or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he hands me a 50 question pamphlet, you know?
Yeah.
So the first 25 are personal, you know, your name, your social security, your address, shit like that. And then the next 25 are creative, you know, describe your perfect day and what's your perfect mate like? Where do you see yourself in 10 years? So I got a case of beer and a couple of pizzas and called everybody I knew at university. I had a career woman, mother of two there, and I had an 18-year-old punk rocker from Toronto there, and I had a bunch of very, very eclectic crowd. And I'd go around the room, and I'd be like, hey, where do you see yourself in 10 years? And I'm like, okay, what's your perfect mate like? And I just look like...
So you took other people's answers?
Pretty much, yeah.
And they're like, wow, this guy is
so amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks great on paper.
We've never seen anything like this before.
Right.
He's like, he's all over, he's unpredictable.
Right.
That's so funny. And then they called you in from that.
Well, what happens is I wound up going to the station to turn in my pamphlet, my questionnaire, mm-hmm. and the lady's like, well, where's your 2-minute video that accompanies your paperwork? And I'm like, oh, I don't have a camcorder, you know. She's like, but I have one in the back. Why don't you come in the back and I'll go ahead and record it for you. And I'm like, ooh, this is how horror movies and pornos start. So I didn't know what the hell I was getting into. So I roll into the back with this lady and she's got this camcorder set up like in this weird janitor's closet. And I'm like, okay. She goes, all right, listen, when this little red light comes on, you have 2 minutes to tell us why you think you belong on the show. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, all right, let me think about this for a second. Okay, fine. So I go ahead and she counts me down, 3, 2, 1. Little red light comes on. I'm like, how you doing, guys? My name's Eddie. I'm from Long Island, New York. I play basketball out here for the university. Now, if you want to know anything more about me, you come find me. And I turn the damn camera off. She goes, what? I go, turn the damn camera off. Boop. She turns it off. I go, look, lady, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean it. She goes, no, great approach, kid. I wish you the best of luck. I've seen some of these tapes.
Yeah.
But good luck with that. And sure as hell, they called me 2 weeks later, said, hey, we want to interview you again. And that was it. The interviewing process started.
And what did you know about the show when you went into Go Live in the House? Did you like know about, again, it's 2000 and there is an internet, right. But it's not like, right. You know, that you could look up anything at any point in time.
I had done a little research on it. I saw Endemol was a big, big production company. They had just done it in the Netherlands and it was huge. And then I think Germany and Italy were still taping at that point, and that was huge. So, you know, now here it is, the States. But then again, Europe and the States, just different tastes in entertainment. But yeah, it rocked and rolled in Europe in those early years.
Sure. And, you know, we didn't know what it was, just like from a fan of it. It's like, oh, okay, what this is like Survivor, but right. It's going to be on every night. Okay, right. Okay, great. Right. And it certainly was not, you know, I don't know what we expected, but I think that, you know, it was such a contrast at that time from like sort of like, okay, this is really cutthroat of what's going on Survivor to... Right. You know, you guys are like putting a puzzle together or like right. Doing a, like, you know, reading an atlas or, what were some of the crazy, because there's a whole generation of people that are fans of Big Brother who may not even, know, right. You know, that, what was going on in that first season.
Right. Yeah. I mean, some of the more memorable one was, you know, we had a bike that we had to do the Tour de France. We had to do 2000 miles in a week. Between yeah. 9 of us or 10 of us or whatever. So that was a fun one. There was a, I think 1600 or 1800 dominoes we had to set up in the logo of Big Brother. And, mm-hmm. Of course somebody would hiccup and knock over half the set. And it was frustrating. But I mean, all in all, it was a good time. It was a fun summer job, I guess.
Yeah. And so. Did you know about like, that it was going to be America voting for how things were going to work and like, do you know the format?
Yeah. No. I knew going into the format, with that format back then where we didn't vote each other off like they do nowadays,
right.
Where there was a 900 number and our fans would call in and vote for us to stay or go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was up for, I think, 10 of the 12.
Right. And if I remember correctly, it was the people in the house would vote to, you had like two picks and you
right.
Could put somebody up for nomination.
Up on the chopping block.
And then America would ultimately send one person home.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, there was one week where 6 of the 7 people in the house were all up on the block. Everybody had 2 votes apiece or whatever okay. It worked out to be. So, yeah. But of all of those rounds, I was up to get kicked out. Most of them.
Yeah, and then they would send home whatever person they like the least, and I feel like it would turn out to be like if anybody did like was sort of negative, people would want to send them home, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. And so that going into this, when you end up like you're in the house for like the first like a couple days, are you enjoying it like because it just is so weird because it's so ingrained of what it is to all of us. And like, because we're in this era of there's like super fans in every season of like, okay, I've seen this play out, you know, 15 times and stuff like that. Like the people who are like know exactly, you know, every beat of what's going to happen. But for you guys, it must have been so surreal to, you know, just be, okay, we're locked up and now and what's happening?
Yeah. It was. It definitely was surreal. It was a little claustrophobic at some times. You know, it was just wait. We can leave, but we can't leave. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was. You know, it wasn't bad at all.
Yeah.
Looking back on it.
So, you came out of it and ultimately were the winner. And it was a $500,000 prize.
Yeah.
Can you believe with inflation and everything, it's still $500,000.
Yeah.
They still have not touched that.
Right.
16 years later.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nuts.
I mean, when the day that we're doing this, they also, you know, that they have announced that not only is Big Brother 18 still on the air, Big Brother 19 has been greenlit, which is going to be a, you know, two Big Brother seasons a year. How crazy is it for you that here's this thing that you did 16 years ago that now is still, they're still doing Julie Chen and basically the name are the only two things that are the same pretty much.
Right.
But it still exists.
Yeah, that blows my mind. Really, really does. Fantastic. Good for them. Julie, great. Congratulations. She's a darling. She's fantastic. But yeah, it blows my mind that they're up to, you know, 16 years later in the run, they're going on 19 shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it blows my mind.
And one of the things that you had said to me when we were getting started to do this was that you don't keep up with the show. You didn't even watch your show.
No.
Why not?
Because I was there. If there was an argument, I know what happened. If somebody was up to get their asses kicked out, I knew it got kicked out. It's kind of like how often you go through your yearbook. Like, you know the people in the book. You know. I don't know. It just didn't interest
me. But you weren't curious to see, like, how it was presented or what they showed?
No, I won, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, you know, wasn't a problem. Didn't care. It was 21. I just didn't give a shit.
So, did they give you just like a trunk of tapes?
Production was really cool. They wound up hooking up all of us with the full VHS library of all 89, 90 shows.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah,
it was really cool.
And then why not follow like the next year where they say, okay, we're gonna continue to do it and we're gonna do we're gonna tweak the format.
Right.
I think they brought in Arnold Shapiro and Alison Grodner, I think, come in at that point. And were you curious to see how they were going to change the format?
Yeah, I think I caught the first one or two episodes of my family back home, and you know, we hung out and watched it. But my parents got addicted. They've watched the show through the years, but I just never got into that or any other reality TV shows. So.
Yeah, and did you feel like that the people from like Big Brother 2, did they embrace the people from Big Brother 1, or did they look at it as their own thing?
Good question. I think they took it as their own thing, you know, because it was the newer format. It was a different style.
And you didn't care because you were off. You were going to do your own thing. So you come out of the house from Big Brother the first season. Yep. And what expectations did you have of what life was going to be like after you got out?
Again, I had no idea. You know, we came off the show and all of us, we had no clue. We didn't, you know, we weren't even convinced that it was really a broadcasted show if it wasn't just some social experiment. We had no idea.
Right.
So then we came out and, you know, for the first, I'd say first 2 years or so, walking around, you know, it was kind of like going to high school with half the country, because I could be in Dallas, you know, in a mall or something like that. I'd be like, Eddie, what's up? How's your family? How's your brother, man? What are you doing out here? I thought you're back in New York. I'm like, oh, yeah. And I'm trying to think, do I know this person?
Right.
And you forget that you're in people's living rooms 5 nights a week.
Well, it must have been, you know, so much more intense for you, because I think that you're so unmistakable that, you know, people watched you on TV and obviously they see you and it's like, you know, it's like, oh, that's definitely, that's definitely Eddie from Big Brother. Whereas, and maybe there's some other people like somebody like Brittany with pink hair. Right. If you see her somewhere, obviously that's her. Because I think for most people, like I know when I went through, I think you see people that are like, is that like the people's like are sort of unsure if they recognize you or not? So that must be, you know, really overwhelming where people are, because you're not somebody who also really probably wants to really talk about all those things.
No, I mean, I'm okay with it. I'm very okay with it. People approach me on the street or, you know, out in public. I'm very okay with it. It's cool. It's definitely a part of my past and my history, and it's where I come from. And I recognize that and I respect that. And I respect that anybody, you know, who supported me back then, who, you know, recognized me 16 years later walking down the street, you know.
Do people still recognize you from Big Brother? Yeah.
Yeah, I still get people now and again.
And what do people say?
Nothing. Hey, Eddie, right? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm trying again to think if I know this person from real life or if it's just...
Because that's confusing too. Because you're trying to like be like you did.
I'm like, yeah, and oh no, I watched the show. It was a big. I say hi. Yeah. Nice to meet you. Thanks a lot. You know, can I get a picture real quick? Yeah, no problem. How you doing? And not a problem. It's totally fine.
So how did you go from okay? So you're out of Big Brother. Mm-hmm. You have this notoriety, mm-hmm. but you don't know necessarily what you can do with it. Obviously, you have these aspirations of what you want to do. So how did you make that leap from what you were doing from Big Brother into where you wanted to be?
Well, I was real lucky with a writer and director out of Toronto back in 2001 who was a fan of the show, liked me, and thought I could, you know, play a role in the film that she had that she was doing called Drop Dead Roses. So, she took a chance on me and introduced me to the producers there in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And they all took a chance on me.
Now, are you back in New York after the show?
Yeah,
you stayed in L.A.?
I'm living in New York, yeah.
Okay.
I'm living in New York. I stayed in New York.
So you're back in New York, and then you go up to Toronto,
to do
the movie. Yeah. And so what's that experience like?
That was a blast.
Yeah.
It was an absolute blast. I got to work with Brian O'Halloran, the guy from Clerks.
Okay.
Brian O'Halloran, I worked with him. Him and I co-starred in this picture together. And it was surreal. It was fantastic. And it really was a dream come true where – here I am working as an actor on a film shooting in Toronto, and it was a blast. It was really, really cool.
So you do that movie, yeah. And then what happens from there?
From there, film gets done, goes out, travels, wins a few shows, gets distribution. I get back to...
And this is a horror movie, right?
No. This is a romantic comedy.
Oh,
it's a rom-com we did, yeah.
Okay.
Then I get back to New York, and I go ahead and get my headshot and my resume, which is really thin at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I shop it around to a couple of agents, and one takes a chance on me in New York City, and was able to hustle me out for a couple of years while I lived in New York, and then gave me the advice to move to L.A.
And what kind of stuff are you working on in New York?
When I was in New York, I worked on like Law and Order and a couple of soaps and a few other features and stuff. So, you know, padded up my resume enough to where I was comfortable with coming to L.A. and,
mm-hmm.
you know, having some good tape at this point and a thick enough resume to move to Los Angeles.
And do you feel like were there a lot of – like was the work steady or was it more that the parts that of calling for an amputee?
Yeah, the parts were, you know, here and there. But, yeah, I would – you know, I'm the bread and butter for me was to be the war vet or the hospital patient,
yeah.
you know, while I was in New York. And then I met up with this writer-director here in L.A., Paul Huff,
mm-hmm.
who totally thinks outside of the box when it comes down to giving me characters in the projects that he does.
Yeah, that's interesting in terms of, like, going out to read for parts. Like, are there ever times, like, whether you were in – you know, going out for these parts in New York where it's like they didn't originally envision the part as an amputee, but then you come in and read for it and it's like, oh, that's a different take on the part.
Yeah. No, that has happened. And, you know, I met Paul Huff and he always saw me as, you know, I could be the bad guy, the scumbag boyfriend, the lowlife lawyer, the getaway driver at the bank robbery. And that's mm-hmm. where he sees me. And he puts me in these great roles in these projects that he does. And I'm just real lucky to have a great guy like him in my corner.
So talk about then from going to New York to then how did you end up making that move to L.A.?
Like I said, my agent told me to come out here. And so I packed a car and I drove it out and wound up staying at Paul's place with him and his wife and his daughter at the time. And, he was helping me, you know, mold and shape my career in the beginning. And just totally supported me and helped me find representation and, you know, has been supporting me ever since.
And what year is that you moved out here?
This is 2007.
So almost 10 years now that you've been out here.
Yeah.
And so since you've been here, you're working on primarily horror stuff?
Yeah. A lot of stuff I do now is...
And is that your passion or...
Yeah,
that,
no. Okay. I've been a huge horror fan since I was a kid. And meeting up with Paul and just collaborating with him is just the dream come true. I mean, he's absolutely brilliant. And, you know, we're working on this website right now called Don't Turn Around.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a YouTube channel up right now. So it's YouTube Don't Turn Around channel. And... he's the writer director of all the stuff, and he fires it over to me, and I voice it over for him.
All right. Well, explain to people what kind of stuff you guys are doing on this YouTube horror channel?
So we do what's called creepypasta, and it's kind of
creepypasta. Okay.
So these cool little original vignettes that he writes and fires them over to me. I voice them over, and then we of the original content, we go ahead and set it to some music and some stills that we come across, and they're great little, you know, 2 to 6 minute stories that we've been doing, and our target audience is generally 8 to 18. Very Goosebumps-ish, you know, with a good darker twist.
Yeah.
And we're actually currently right now we're working on a choose your own adventure type of story that we're doing. So yeah. Depending on which way you want to go, you'd click on the link to see if you run up the stairs, run down the stairs, run out the back, or fight or whatever. So we're working on that right now. It's pretty big and pretty elaborate. We've been working on it for about 6 months now.
So the genre is sort of like the are you afraid of the dark?
Yes.
Yeah. Type.
Yep.
You know, young adult.
Yeah, young adult.
Trying to keep,
PG, you know.
Keep kids awake at night, waking up their parents.
Yeah.
Crying.
Yeah, fun little dark stories that we do generally.
And they're all like just these short interstitial YouTube videos.
Yep.
That people are watching.
Yeah.
And so obviously you have a great voice for this.
Thank you. And you do
all of the voiceover. So some that your partner Paul writes these stories.
Yep.
And you do the voiceover.
Yeah, I do the voiceover on them.
Okay. And do you do the production? Do you star in any of the?
No. I mean, most of it's narrative. It's all me just narrating the stories for him. But yeah, no, Paul's the writer director of it. So and yeah, he's absolutely brilliant.
Okay. And are you collaborating on the story ideas of like?
I do. Yeah. I do a little bit with him. Yeah. Again, he's more of the brains. But yeah, I do fire off a couple of good ideas from now and again, and he likes them and he puts them in.
Yeah.
So.
And we'll post links to all that stuff on the website. Do you want to show one of the clips of one of the videos?
Sure, I'd love to. I think we have one. It's called "The Face Behind the Voice."
Okay, the face behind the voice. Okay, this
will be on our YouTube channel. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds creepy already.
So, quite a few people have asked what I look like. Well, this is me. The most common question I get is, how did I lose my leg? Look, I love to go swimming. I'm from New York where the movie Jaws was set.
Oh.
Yeah. I wish I could say the shark didn't have a chance. But I was just a kid then. Nah. The truth? Have you ever seen those parking signs that say, if you back up, severe damage will ensue? Well, when I was young, my family insanely hired a babysitter off the internet. Tied my waist to these spikes sticking out of the ground.
Oh my god! Oh my god! You should never hire babysitters
from the internet.
Off the internet.
Lesson learned.
Yes, that much better. So in the video that we saw, that you know, you're doing like these what do you call those things? The rings.
The rings. Yeah, down at Santa Monica.
Yeah.
I live in Santa Monica.
I mean, you're still in great shape.
Thank you.
Very impressive. If you're listening to the podcast version, you should see like what you're doing on the rings. It's very, very impressive. I mean, do you still do any like competitive athletics or anything like that?
Yeah, I still play basketball. Still play wheelchair basketball when I can. Yeah, the team I found is in Pasadena now.
But are you a gymnast also?
No, I have had some gymnast background. Yeah, when I was a kid, I had a little bit of gymnast training, a little bit of martial arts.
Yeah,
but yeah, I try to keep active, try to keep fit. You know, just try to stay healthy.
Yeah, it's very impressive.
Thank you.
Okay, and this is like a video that's just all about you, creepy stories. Like,
yeah. Well, again, this is just one of the many stories that we have over on our website.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's a bunch of them, and they range everywhere from psycho killers to hitchhikers.
Are you like the crypt keeper in sort of like is your narrator a character in like let me tell you another one, kid?
Yeah, kind of, sort of. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, kind of like that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of fun to do. So
is Halloween coming? Like, are you a big?
Yeah, enjoy Halloween. Halloween's a fun time. It's
yeah.
a fun time for us.
And you don't have kids, right?
No.
Okay. Is that something that you one day are you looking to have like a, cause I, as somebody with kids, like I feel like I would like to tell them scares, except I would like them to sleep also.
Yeah, I would. I'd love to have kids one day. I don't know when or if, but yeah, I know I love kids, and yeah, I look forward to maybe shaping them.
Besides YouTube, what else are you guys working on?
Well, Paul and I are actually working on this picture we're trying to get off the ground called Noon Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We did this film called The Human Race that we got a couple of years ago. And it was a really fun, fast-paced, kind of like an R-rated version, a tougher, bloodier version of The Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul has written this this really cool, fast sci-fi alien invasion picture that we're looking to do called Noon.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really, really excited about that, hoping to get that off the ground by the end of the year.
Now, at the heart of Hunger Games is sort of a reality TV show. Is that part of the, like, for you as a creator, do you see some sort of, like, a parallel? Like, are you able to draw on your Big Brother experience in that?
Yeah, I mean, there have been some things that I've gone out for and projects that I've worked on where I've been able to pull from, you know, Big Brother experience.
Mm-hmm.
Not often, but it's definitely, you know, it's definitely a part of who I am and where I come from.
So yeah.
I understand that.
So are you guys in production yet on that?
No, we're not. We're currently in the finding money executive producer production aspect of it.
So. Okay. And so then what sort of a release schedule do you guys have with YouTube?
With
the YouTube channel, like are you guys
every Thursday we're putting out new videos.
Okay,
so yeah, so we have a couple all queued up and ready to go. Matter of fact, I have to work on one later today with Paul.
Okay,
but yeah, every Thursday night we fire them off on the YouTube channel. So get people to go over there and subscribe, and then we fire them off to them, let them know that we're up and out.
Okay, did you want to show this other clip that we have too?
Yeah, sure. This is a little short film that Paul and I did called The Angel. And
okay,
we did this I guess about 6 years ago, I guess.
Okay. This is from The Angel.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. This is The Angel. Right. Got like a creepy monster with teeth eyes.
Yes.
And the girl is running. Very creepy monster for the people listening to the podcast. And here you come. Yeah. You take down the monster with your crutch.
Right. I learned wire stunt work when I was spending my time in Toronto.
Yeah.
This is wire work that I got to do in this short, which was a blast.
Now the monster is coming back around. Very Matrix-like.
Yeah. Grab some Tiger Hidden Dragon. Big influence on this as well. So.
And then you do all that... Those stunts?
Yeah, it's all me. It's all wires.
And then you have a knife in your crotch.
Yeah.
That's not real, right? That's not a real... You don't really have that, right?
No, I don't.
And then more blades in the crutches. Really, very, very dangerous.
Yeah. Eddie. It was a fun little 7-minute short film we did a couple of years ago, which got to travel and win awards at a couple of film festivals for best short film. So we're real proud of that one.
Yeah, very creepy monster also.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if I'm going to be able to sleep tonight.
Funny.
So I have some questions for you from the listeners of the podcast.
Sure.
To ask you. And so a lot of people are probably the thing they may know the best from the original season of Big Brother is Chicken George. And he came back to play in the All-Stars and sort of really, you know, people still talk about Chicken George as a crazy character. Did you watch any of that when he played again?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Is he a nice guy?
He was a sweetheart. He was always very good to me. And the little bit I saw him after the show, he's always sweet and gentle and nice with me. And yeah, no, he's a great guy. I hope he's doing well.
Yeah. Do you keep in touch with any of the people from that first season of Big Brother?
Just Brittany here and there. I saw Brit.
What does she do?
I believe she's working. I think she's working on Supergirl right now, working in production, somewhere in production.
Yeah. What so. Do you know what she does?
No.
Okay.
No.
But she, you know, she yeah. stayed. She stayed out
stayed
here
in LA. Yeah, stayed here in LA and got involved in production, and she's been busy doing that for a couple of years now, doing well for herself. Real okay. happy for her.
Have you ever given any thought to David Baltazar wants to know how do you think you would fare in the current version of Big Brother if you had to be cutthroat and you know sort of make these alliances and stuff like that?
I don't think I'd do too good.
Yeah, you think that you would be a target, or you don't think you would have the heart to?
I mean it's not that I wouldn't have the heart. I don't know. It's all like manipulative and backstabbing and.
You don't like that part of the game.
Nah, it seems like a bunch of bullshit. It's not for me.
Do you like the original format better? Should they have kept that format the same?
I don't know. I think what I liked about the original format when I was on was it let the audience be a part of the show. You know, they predicted and they got to determine who stayed and who went, which I thought was cool. Where now, I believe with this current format, the audience is more of a fly on the wall and they're watching. They're watching as opposed to participating, you know?
Okay. This is very topical. I have to get your take on this. So David Baltazar wants to know, what was better, winning the inaugural season of Big Brother or selling your company for $1.2 billion? So are you aware of this? That Jamie from the original Big Brother.
Yeah.
That she, I guess, has like some cosmetic company.
Yeah, I've seen her.
And it was recently sold for $1.2 billion.
It's fantastic. Congratulations to her. I think that's great.
That did you know about this?
I'd seen her on some infomercials on TV. And I was like, hey, I know that girl. I totally know her. I did not know she sold the company for that. I think that's fantastic. Yes. Good for her.
Now I'm looking at an article.
That's great.
It says how this 10-minute spot on QVC turned this woman into a $100 million cosmetics mogul, but that apparently
good for
she
her.
Sold for $1.2 billion.
Fantastic. Congratulations, Jamie.
Yeah. That's crazy. Ian Rice wants to know, what is a horror movie or franchise that is overlooked or underrated?
Ooh. Good question. I don't know. You know, I'm a fan of the old 80s, of the old Carpenter, you know, stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, what I did check out recently that I'm a fan of is Stranger Things.
Oh yes.
On Netflix. Fantastic. Yes. Fantastic. Really, really yeah. well done.
I watched
really,
the first couple episodes the other night.
That's what I'm into right now. And it's brilliant. I really like it. I really, really enjoy it.
Yeah. What is it? Is it the nostalgia or is there anything specific about what they're doing?
No, I mean, I think it's just all around. I think it's really well written. The kids in it are absolutely amazing. The way it's shot is just so reminiscent of the old E.T. and The Shining, and it's just all these fantastic old, you know, it's an homage to these great old 80s, you know, horror movies, which is just a blast. It's a lot of fun to watch.
Okay. Ryan Anthony wants to know, what is the best and worst horror movie you have seen? Well, it's probably hard to do a worst. Like at some point, it's like there's like a good worst and bad worst.
Right.
But what are some of your favorites?
I really liked The Ring when it came out. That was pretty trippy for me. I remember watching that and being blown away by that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, The Ring I really liked. And I don't know. I guess, you know, I'd have to go back to, you know, again, Carpenter stuff, you know, like The Thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all of his old great pictures. And of course, you know, Wes Craven's Freddy Krueger. And, you know, we have Friday the 13th. All those great, fun 80s horrors. You know?
Right. Anything recent that really you feel like people should check out if they haven't seen?
No, I can't think of anything I recommend.
Yeah. Do you go see a lot of the new stuff that comes out?
Not often. Yeah. Not often. But when I do, I try to make a day of it and enjoy myself.
Mm-hmm. And then is there anything that you feel like it has a really good reputation or a lot of people are into and you just don't get it?
No, not really.
Okay. David Baltazar also wants to know, right. Do you like Steadicam, shaky cam, or found footage horror movies? Like, what do you think about like these? There's another Blair Witch project.
Right, the Blair Witch, all that found footage stuff. The the what's the other one? Paranormal Activities. Yeah, all of those. I think they're great. You know, I they're not my favorite genre of they're not my favorite style of horror, but I don't mind them. But no, I do like Steadicam stuff, but yeah, found footage stuff isn't bad, but it's definitely not my choice. It's not my go-to. It's not like if there's a new found footage, I have to go watch it.
Yeah. And so would you ever consider doing any sort of found footage type stuff?
Yeah, I mean, if the script was good, yeah, I mean, absolutely. If it was something I could get behind, yeah, absolutely, I'm in for it.
Okay.
So.
Well, Eddie, thank you for coming on here with us. Anything else you want to tell people to check out?
Nah, just, you know, if you guys get a chance, shoot on over to the YouTube channel, Don't Turn Around, and subscribe and hook us up. That'd be great.
Okay. So we'll post the link, don'tturnaround.com.
Yeah.
Are you on social media? Do you do any of that?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, and but a lot of my interaction with fans and people is through Don't Turn Around. So okay. I answer them every day and get to it. So.
All right. Well, Eddie, thank you so much coming on here and talking with us about this stuff. And definitely go and check out don'tturnaround.com. And all the best with everything you're working on.
Hey, thank you so much, man. I appreciate you.
Okay, take care.
Okay, thanks.
Bye.
See you guys.